You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hurricane Dorian has killed 5 people in the Bahamas. 25 are dead after a fire off Santa Cruz Island in California. There has been another shooting in Texas, and there has been one in Alabama where a 14-year-old has admitted to shooting dead 5 people in his family. The hurricane in Britain, that is Boris Johnson, has said October 14th would be re-election time if MPs did not back him on a no-deal Brexit. In Hong Kong, Carrie Lam has said she considered resigning despite admitting failure, this in a leaked video, and all of this from just outside of this country, and I cannot even begin with all the things that happened in the country. The point of this podcast is simply that. All that took place over the course of the day in not just the country, but across the world is what I bring to you on Stories of the Day. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
Let's start with India business stories as usual. Investors knocked down shares of large public sector banks after the government unveiled its plan to merge several of the lenders amid concerns that the integration process might delay its bad loan cleanup and slow lending approvals. The 4 key large lenders at the center of the merged groups, that is Punjab National Bank, Canara Bank, Union Bank of India and Indian Bank, fell today as investors fretted over the impact of absorbing their weaker peers. The mergers were announced after the market shut on Friday for a long weekend, with Monday being a holiday. While the Modi government is keen for banks to give more loans to boost an economy growing at its slowest in 6 years, the timing of the mergers means that management attention may shift to realigning resources and processes. That could leave them little time to focus on their key immediate task of cleaning up the worst stressed asset ratio among major economies. So, not a good day on Dalal Street, and certainly the PSB mergers not helping. Sovereign bonds in India are poised to advance after economic growth slumped to a 6-year low, bolstering bets for deeper interest rate cuts. Yields on India's benchmark 10-year bond have dropped more than 100 basis points from their high this year as the central bank slashed rates 4 times in an attempt to spur growth. Another 50 basis points of rate cuts may be on the way, according to a revised forecast by Goldman Sachs. With GDP having undershot expectations, government bonds are likely to rally on renewed expectations of monetary easing. The yield on the benchmark 10-year bond rose 1 basis point to 6.56% on Friday. The National Highways Authority of India, that is NHAI, is expected to raise money by keeping its assets as collateral. The agency is in the final stages of discussion with State Bank of India to raise funds for its future projects under this new mode. According to the new terms of the agreement, State Bank of India will lend the NHAI 80% of the project value. The rest of the money will be arranged by the Highways Authority. The loan would be repaid over at least 15 years. The money to repay the loan will be earned through toll revenue from securitized highways. Meanwhile, the government has announced an increase in the price of ethanol procured by the public sector oil marketing companies for 1 year, starting December. The price of ethanol derived from sea-heavy molasses has been increased by 29 paise a litre to 43 rupees 75 paise, and for B-heavy molasses by 16 paise to 54.27 rupees per litre. The price of ethanol from sugarcane juice, sugar syrup root has been fixed at 59 rupees 48 paise per litre. Beleaguered bank IDBI is set to get a fresh lifeline of 9,000 crore rupees, with the government planning to pay its share of the bailout money that LIC has been seeking for the past several months. With the announcement, the bank stock saw a 10% boost in the markets. While LIC, which is the majority owner of IDBI Bank, will have to cough up close to 4,500 crore rupees as its share, the government is expected to chip in with a matching contribution. LIC paid about 20,000 crore rupees to acquire its majority stake. That investment is now worth less than half, with IDBI Bank share price falling from 56.5 rupees to 26.7 rupees on Friday. The money will be released as part of the 70,000 crore rupees bank recapitalization plan, of which over 55,000 crore rupees has already been earmarked for the state-run lenders led by the entity that will be created by the merger of Punjab National Bank, Oriental Bank of Commerce and United Bank of India, which will receive 16,000 crore rupees. Sources have said the fresh support to IDBI will help it tide over its latest financial crisis, given that it has non-performing assets, that is NPAs, at a massive 29% of advances. The bank has been in the red for the last 11 quarters, despite the management and the government repeatedly suggesting that the worst is over. Its capital base has been eroded and the capital adequacy ratio was estimated at a dismal 8.1%. The poor show has meant that the bank faces restrictions on expansion and lending under the Reserve Bank of India's prompt corrective action framework. And now, of course, the white knight of the country, LIC, which owns, majority owns IDBI Bank, has come back yet again to save yet another distressed bank. Quick news from elsewhere in the country. A massive fire broke out at the Uran ONGC complex near JNPT port this morning. The fire, which started in the oil and gas processing plant, has killed four people and injured at least three. A village near the plant has been evacuated. The ONGC said there was no impact on oil processing and that the gas was diverted to its Hazira plant in Surat district of Gujarat. The ONGC complex processes all the oil and gas which gets produced at Bombay High oil fields. The area around the plant is sensitive due to the close proximity of the JNPT port and strategic assets of the Indian Navy. Gas supplies of both PNG and CNG in Mumbai were hit following the fire. Mahanagar Gas Limited, which supplies domestic, industrial and vehicular gas, said that gas supply to its city gate station Vadala has been badly affected because of the accident. Mumbai City Gas Distributor MGL said gas supply to MGL City Gate Station at Vadala was severely affected, but it is ensuring that supply to its domestic PNG consumers would be maintained on priority without interruption. But many CNG stations may not operate across Mumbai due to low pressure in the pipeline, MGL said in a tweet. The company has advised industrial and commercial customers in the city to switch to alternate fuel. Gas supplies across MGL's network will normalize once the supply of natural gas from ONGC is restored. The Supreme Court has agreed to examine a plea that starvation deaths continue to eat into the right to life and dignity of social fabric, and a radical new measure like community kitchens need to be set up across the country to feed the poor and the hungry. A bench led by Justice N.V. Ramana issued notice to the government on the petition filed jointly by activists Anund Dhawan, Ishan Dhawan and Kunjana Singh. The petition said state-funded community kitchens was not a novel concept in the country. They pointed out how Tamil Nadu's Amma Unavagam had become a roaring success by involving peers in self-help groups, employing the poor to serve hygienic food to eradicate the gnawing problem of hunger on the streets. The petition also referred to how Rajasthan's Annapurna Rasoi, Indira Canteens in Karnataka, Delhi's Aam Aadmi Canteen, Anna Canteen in Andhra Pradesh, Jharkhand Mukhyamantri Dal Bhat and Odisha's Ahar Centre were combating starvation and malnutrition crises. It urged the court to direct the chief secretaries across the country to formulate schemes for the implementation of community kitchens and to further ensure that no person should sleep on an empty stomach. It called for the creation of a national food grid by the centre beyond the scope of the public distribution scheme. Mithali Raj, the former India women's cricket kit team captain, announced her retirement from T20 internationals on Tuesday. The 36-year-old, who holds numerous batting records in all formats of the game, led India in 32 T20I matches, including the three editions of the Women's T20 World Cup in 2012, 2014 and 2016. She said she was doing this in order to focus her energies and attention on the 2021 One Day World Cup. Mithali said in a statement, and I quote, "It remains my dream to win a World Cup for my country and I want to give it my best," unquote. Mithali Raj was also the captain in India Women's first ever T20I played in Derby back in 2006. Since that win against England Women, she played another 88 games in which she scored 2,364 runs, the most by an Indian woman in T20 internationals. Mithali Raj is also the first Indian to reach the landmark of 2,000 T20 international runs. She wished the Indian T20 team good luck as they prepare for the home series against South Africa. Some international business headlines now. India's dumping its extra sugar on the world, threatening to further drag down prices that are already at the lowest in almost a year. The centre is spending 6,268 crore rupees to subsidise exports to cut the nation's record stockpiles. The move is drawing ire from rival growers in Brazil and Australia, who say the policy is depressing world prices and hurting their farmers. Meanwhile, hedge funds are betting that declines for futures will continue. The subsidies are just another blow to the market that's already suffering from oversupply. A weaker currency in Brazil, which is the world's top producer and exporter, has encouraged a flood of shipments. Meanwhile, demand growth is also slowing in developing countries over health concerns, and threats to the global economy could further hurt consumption. Even though world inventories are forecast to drop, the excess board is still big enough to satisfy annual consumption in India and the European Union, which are the top consumers of sugar. Lebanon is set to declare a state of economic emergency, initiating plans to accelerate reforms in an effort to save the country's ailing economy. This is, of course, the newest in the list of ailing economies, Argentina being the other one recently. Prime Minister Saad Hariri reiterated the importance of reducing the country's deficit following a meeting between his cabinet and political leaders. The meeting comes amid heightened tensions on the southern border of Lebanon between Hezbollah and Israel. Lebanon is among the most indebted countries in the world, with public debt equating to about 150% of its GDP, according to the International Monetary Fund. The small Mediterranean country bordering Israel to the south and Syria to the east passed a state budget in July, hoping that new austerity measures will cut the country's deficit and unlock $11 billion of foreign aid needed to keep the economy afloat. Details of the budget have not been released to the public, but there may be reportedly a freeze on state hiring, a 2% tax on imported goods, and an increase in tax on interest income. But no specific agreement has been made on how to reduce the deficit, according to an analyst. But as of now, there is a state of economic emergency in Lebanon. If you thought the Taliban was out of the news, well, a major Taliban suicide attack on an affluent area of Kabul has killed at least 16 people and injured more than 100 others. The attack came just hours after the US said it had agreed a deal in principle with the Taliban for the withdrawal of around 5,000 troops from Afghanistan. The attack began late on Monday night when a tractor rigged with explosives hit the compound's western wall, causing significant damage and destroying a number of nearby homes. Thick black smoke could still be seen rising from the area on Tuesday morning, according to a report by the Associated Press. Some of the fires were reportedly started by protesting Afghan locals, angry at being caught in the middle of the conflict. It was not immediately clear why the Taliban would continue to carry out such attacks when the militant group appears to be getting what it wants in a deal with the US, which is a troop withdrawal. The group wants all of the some 20,000 US and NATO troops out of Afghanistan immediately, while the US seeks a withdrawal in phases that would depend on the Taliban meeting certain conditions, such as a reduction in violence. And handling all of this from the American side as of now, Donald Trump. As North Korea fired off a series of missiles in recent months, at least 18 since the month of May, US President Donald Trump has repeatedly dismissed their importance as short-range and very standard tests. Now, American intelligence officials and outside experts have come to a fairly different conclusion. Surprise! They have said that the launchings downplayed by Trump, including two late last month, have allowed North Korea to test missiles with greater range and maneuverability that could overwhelm American defenses in the region. Japan's Defense Minister Takeshi Iwaya told reporters in Tokyo last week that the irregular trajectories of the most recent tests conducted by North Korea were more evidence of a program designed to defeat the defenses Japan has deployed with American technology at sea and onshore. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's flattery of Trump, some experts say, are part of his strategy of buying time to improve his arsenal despite all the sanctions on North Korea. The rapid improvements in the short-range missiles not only put Japan and South Korea in increased danger, but also threaten at least 8 American bases in those countries housing more than 30,000 troops. This, according to an analysis of the missile ranges by the New York Times. Such missiles could be designed to carry either conventional on nuclear warheads. So he's praising Kim Jong-un, who's using this time to better improve his arsenal of missiles. He's praising Putin, and he's having war of words with Denmark about wanting to buy Greenland. If the end of days has come, there is no greater evidence than this asshat sitting in the White House. A quick look at what's happening in the world of tech. Facebook and YouTube are both edging away from the popularity metrics they basically invented. Facebook is experimenting with hiding like counts, which appear beneath people's photos and posts to the social network. Reverse engineer Jane Manchin Wong discovered this by digging through Facebook's code that it was experimenting with hiding like counts. Instead of seeing an exact number of likes on someone else's post, users would instead see whether one friend of theirs and others have liked it. The original poster will still be able to see who has liked their post. Facebook did not elaborate on the motivations behind this test, but it's already started rolling something similar out on Instagram. In Instagram's case, the company's logic was that public like count might be contributing to a kind of digital one-upmanship on social media and potentially making users feel bad. The changes come after an extended conversation in the tech industry about the way social media and apps make people feel. It's an important conversation, but a necessary conversation, even if difficult, about the psychological impacts of social media, and this may well be a decent start. A new feature on Apple Watch, that is sleep tracking, could be announced as early as next week. This new feature, codenamed Burrito internally and called Time in Bed Tracking, that is TIBT, will allow users to choose to wear Apple Watch to bed. While asleep, the Apple Watch will track the user's quality of sleep using its multiple sensors and inputs, including the person's movement, heart rate, and noises. Sleep quality data will be made available in the Health app and a new Sleep app for the Apple Watch. While wearing the watch, if the user wakes up and starts their day before their alarm goes off, it will automatically turn off the alarm. It's unclear whether the new sleep tracking features will require a forthcoming model of the Apple Watch, but given the current rumors about new watches being a minor revision, it is likely that it won't require new hardware. But knowing it's Apple, it might just require you to buy a new one for another $100 billion. In some of the pieces of news that I happen to find today, a twice-yearly jab, which replaces daily statins, could be a game changer for millions of people with high cholesterol. You've all seen people in your family, maybe, taking tablets like atorvastatin, etc. Statins, these are of course for high cholesterol. Now they're saying two jabs, two injections in a year could eliminate the need for these pills. A landmark study of 1,600 people over 18 months found that the injection halved the levels of bad cholesterol in the blood without any apparent side effects. Now, what are bad cholesterols? You have your low-density lipoproteins and very low-density lipoproteins. These are your bad cholesterols. What is the good cholesterol? High-density one. And this study went on to show that this injection made these bad cholesterols come to almost half the number without any apparent side effects. Doctors say that this drug, called inclisiran, showed phenomenal results and could transform the lives of millions of people who have to take these statin tablets every day. It could also help lower the risk of a heart attack or stroke. From your arteries straight to space, the European Space Agency has had to perform its first ever collision avoidance maneuver to avoid one of its satellites smashing into a mega constellation. One of the space agency's satellites was on a collision course with the constellation, which is made up of a vast number of internet satellites called Starlink that were put into space by Elon Musk's SpaceX. Without the maneuver, the satellites could have collided high above the Earth. But such moves might not be possible in the future, according to the European Space Agency. As more such constellations arrive in space, the danger will be vastly increased and will not be able to be solved by maneuvering out of the way. You remember that first scene in Gravity? When one thing hits another and there's like a whole bunch of pieces that start ricocheting and start revolving around the Earth's orbit. Now that problem could get worse over time as space gets more and more and more crowded. In this case, that was what was about to happen, but that has been avoided. There was a recent graduate from Stanford who came up with a mechanism to sort of avoid this happening in maybe the next 100 or 200 years, and that is worth paying attention to. I think Vox carried a video piece about it. But as of now, the European agency, Space Agency, has avoided this collision from happening by this collision avoidance maneuver. And finally, a quick recap of what happened in the markets. You already know about it from an evening walk down Dalal Street, but suffice to say, it was a pretty bad day on Dalal Street. Weaker than expected GDP growth has clearly hurt investor sentiment, in addition to, of course, all the other headwinds we're seeing from across the world. 2% losses on the Nifty and Sensex is what we saw. The BSE Sensex went down 770 points. Nifty went down 225 points. Some PSU banks were among the worst hit. PSU Bank Index took quite a beating, falling 5% today. The BSE mid-cap and small-cap indices, that is the broader markets, outperformed the Sensex today, but still they were down, 1.65% down for mid-cap and 1.32% down for small-cap. And among individual stocks, IDBI Bank surged 10%, like I told you, after the Union Cabinet approved infusion of fresh capital. But of course, several other public sector banks took a huge beating on account of the merger news. Global stocks also slipped toward a recent two-month low, because, well, US-China trade tensions drove investors to the relative shelter of gold, which, as you know, has hit record highs, 40,000 rupees for 10 grams. Huge. Why? One of the Digging Deeper podcasts we'll be doing over the course of the week will be talking about just that. There's also the Japanese yen and the government debt that investors have taken shelter in. So it was a bad day, even as far as global markets were concerned. Well, I hope you listen to our other podcast today, that is Digging Deeper, where we speak about currency manipulation and whether China has been doing it. Yes. And is this the first time that America has designated a country as a currency manipulator? No, it did so back in 1994, again with China during Clinton's time. What exactly is currency manipulation, and does it serve any purpose, and who is a winner in all of this? To find out all of that, considering I've been saying trade war for about a year now, go listen to that podcast. In the meanwhile, do write into us or leave us a comment wherever it is that you listen to us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor. Oh, and before I forget, the Booker shortlist has been announced. If you, like a few of my friends, have the habit of at least trying to read the shortlisted books before the winner is announced, these are the books you need to be reading, because this is the shortlist. Margaret Atwood, The Testaments, which is, of course, a sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. Lucy Ellman, Duck's Newburyport, which is a 1,000-page long book, and it is all one sentence. It is the stream of conscious narrative of a woman from the US, and it's a challenging book. A friend of mine finished reading it. She said the joy of having finished it was greater than the joy she derived from reading the book itself. Make of that what you will. Bernardine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other is another shortlisted book. Chigozie Obioma's An Orchestra of Minorities is another shortlisted book. Elif Shafak, 10 minutes 38 seconds in This Strange World, and Salman Rushdie's take on Don Quixote called Quichot is another shortlisted book, although reviews have not been very kind on that book. With that said, now I bid thee farewell. I'll see you first thing in the morning tomorrow with a morning walk down Dalal Street and stock picks of the day. Until then, bye.
And finally, a word on our subscription product. Money Control Pro offers curated market data, stock analysis, and trading recommendations. You can now subscribe to Money Control Pro for just 289 rupees for a year as part of our independence offer. Use the code FREEDOM, FREEDOM. The offer is valid until the 31st of August for Android and desktop users. You can log on to moneycontrol.com to subscribe.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.